Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Crime Scene Queens. We are the show to listen to if you want to hear from real experts in the field, you know, the experts that maybe have a true understanding of the confidentiality and the respect for the deceased and their families. And we also believe in not exploiting victims. So on that note, I'm Shelley, your courtroom cat.
So I am Laura, your crime scene investigator and field mouse. And I am super excited because we are back talking again about one of my very favorite subjects, something that I even focused on for my master's degree. That's right. You can call me Master Laura from now on.
Skulls.
We are talking about skulls. Not just squishy skulls, hard skulls, flexy skulls, lovely skulls, male skulls,
female skulls. Fractured and need to be put back together again. Yeah.
Yes. Skulls that are fractured and need to be put back together again. So before we dive into literally that exact topic, Shelley, I did want to finish off with one more fun fact to carry over from last week's episode before we start. Yeah. Before we start transitioning from kind of root science into actual cases that I've worked with skulls. So we are all skeletally female until we turn around 12 years old. Now, what I mean by that is, of course, you still have a Y chromosome when you're born. And this has nothing to do with gender identity. We are talking about XXXY, right? So we all are morphologically female. What that means is a lot of the indicators of sex that I discussed in episode one are not apparent. Because the bone hasn't developed in that way, a lot of the traits that we reviewed, a lot of that more robust nature that tends to occur in males does not appear until you start to become 12 years old.
So are you saying that the skull changes shape?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, your entire body changes through adolescence. I mean, there's a reason why. You know, preteens and like those early teenage years and even the middle and late teenage years, a lot is going on in their body. And then people think, oh, teenagers are crazy, yada, yada, yada. That's why we make all the mistakes that we're supposed to make when we're teens. There is not just hormonal changes that are triggering some of those skeletal developments. There is actual morphological change going on in your body, which is super interesting to nerds like me.
And me.
And you, that's why we're friends and doing a podcast together.
So, you know, when you're talking about the skull not developing fully, it's kind of like when, you know, we're not finished growing. Well, me, I think I finished growing at like, I don't know, second, third grade, something like that. But
Because you're tiny.
Yeah, because I'm, you know, just, yes, half pint. So, but I think that, you know, you're talking about that the skull hasn't fully developed. So it grows just like our other bones do to make us taller. Accurate?
Yeah, like there's, you know how like when a baby is born, like a lot of people are apprehensive around newborns because basically like you can feel that soft spot and everything is super pliable, which is exactly why a newborn baby is able to fit through the birth canal, because of that ability to move. And in fact, something that just came to my mind is I remember when I was a new student studying human osteology, my professor had told this story about a woman who was standing outside of her apartment complex and she was on her cell phone. And out of nowhere, a child fell on the ground.
Oh, my gosh.
And she, yeah, and she looked down.
Like a sack of potatoes, like just like, yeah, just like fell.
Just plop. And she was like, oh, hello. And this was like a young child. And she said he looked at her, realized that he had fallen, and started crying. So
that's because when the baby fell, she didn't go, yay. And, you know,
exactly.
Yes. Because that's right, what as moms
she was shocked.
Do. Yes.
So she looks up. The baby fell like four stories.
No. And survived.
Yes. Yes. Oh, because mom had then presented, and like started freaking out.
Yeah.
And it's because we are like children are a combination of fragile and
flexible,
super pliable.
Yeah, pliable.
I mean, like they have a good bounce, right? Like, yeah. I mean, of course, there's this whole other dynamic with like shaken babies, but this was not the same. Like, the kid was literally kind of like how when trees don't come down in tornadoes because they bend and sway because they're not too sturdy. Like, you'll see, like, a skyscraper fall because it doesn't sway.
Yeah, but you can see that palm tree and that thing just goes, like, top to toes.
So, so I'll reference back to episode one when I said, you know, we're born with over 300 bones and then we end up with 208. So we actually have some built-in resilience with that ability to have a flexible body. Mm-hmm. So as we grow and that has all of those fusion points at the sutures that I mentioned earlier in episode one about aging.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's where all that separation occurs. And actually, I mean, this might sound a little bit morbid, but since we're talking about it scientifically, I don't think it's going too far. But attending a baby autopsy is super intense. So huge trigger warning. If any of you have suffered child or infant loss, please, like, fast forward about 30 seconds. But infant bones are so thin and pliable that when you in autopsy, when we see them, like, you can literally hold them up and, like, see through them. They're, like, they're nearly transparent.
Yeah.
Baby autopsies are not cool, by the way. Sorry. Like, it doesn't matter how seasoned you are. They're not cool. It's awful. Right. So getting back to skulls, one story that that came to mind when you referenced putting them back together. So there are, as we have mentioned in previous episodes, cases that stand out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And staying true to the nature of our show, I do know this victim's name. I'm not going to say her name because I don't know how her family feels, but she stands out. I was a student under the tutelage of my mentor, and we were working a case in Northern Florida. And for some reason, this case and her story spoke to me very, very deeply. And the gist of it is she met a guy.
Mm-hmm.
She had a lot of self-esteem issues when it pertains to weight.
Okay.
And he was cute. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as a woman, I know exactly, or as a heterosexual woman, I know what it feels like to meet a guy and get really excited.
Yeah.
And maybe he's a little cuter than the guys you normally date, and that's a little bit like, ooh, right?
Yes.
So he does what I think is, like, the worst part is he kind of sees her for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he sees her for a few weeks. He makes her.
He courts her.
Yeah, he makes her trust him, and he makes her feel special. And one day,
mm-hmm.
he's driving her car, and I think it gives her the impression that he's taking her to some kind of surprise. And he brings her to the woods, and she's walking in front of him, and he fucking bludgeons her skull with a hammer.
Oh, whoa.
Yes. He strikes her, and I did the analysis on this, supported by my mentor, since I was a student, so she came behind me and confirmed my findings. I found 7 strike marks to her skull.
Wow.
And he then steals her wallet and her car, and he drives from the Northern Florida area to the Tampa area in her car and withdraws all of her money, which, by the way, was less than $300.
How does he have her ATM pin?
Because she told it to him.
Oh boy. Okay.
And he, like, steals her car, which, by the way, was not a valuable vehicle. I'm not going to, like, say the price of it so that I don't, like, shame anyone. Yeah. Like, I don't want to, like, but put it this way. The car was not a Lamborghini, a Mercedes, a Lexus, a BMW. It was not any of those things. In fact, it was multiple tiers below that, and it was super old and not in great condition. So that really fucking pissed me off, because why put her through the emotional turmoil?
Yeah.
Of making her think you like her. Just kill her immediately. I mean, I know this doesn't make it better. Like, I'm not trying to say that her death, like, I'm not trying to say that her death was, like, in any way going to be better. But, like, the fact that he dangled her and teased her and made her feel special and, like, all of that, like, just for some reason that hit deeper for me. Like,
yeah.
It's not better if she had met a stranger in a bar and she had died this way, but, like, it just was additionally cruel.
Yeah. Because he was messing so, with her emotions. And yeah, it's like mental abuse. Mental abuse prior to the physical abuse. And yeah. Jeez.
Exactly. Thank you. And it was, I mean, the only thing I can say is I'm really hoping... Never mind. Okay. I know that she experienced fear because based on the strike marks that I saw, mm-hmm. it came to the back of her head and then you can tell that she fell and then it comes to the side of her head. So you guys, I get that this conversation is really dark, but I'm just trying to explain my motivation behind what I did next. And I want you guys to understand this case like really bothered me. I was very young when I did this. She wasn't much younger than I was when I did this case. And a few things stand out subsequently. The detective met us at the autopsy suite as we were with the medical examiner doing their postmortem. And he had said to me, I guess he felt safe telling me, or I was the closest person to him. He's like, hey, I've spoken with her mother. Her mother would really like some of her hair. Now, I look down and see what I see. And there's not a strand of hair that's appropriate to hand over to the family. So I talk to the medical examiner, I cut some of her hair off, and then I go over to the sink and I start to wash her hair because what am I going to do? Say no?
Yeah. Yeah. It was bloody and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was gross. It uh-huh. was exactly how you would think it would have been. So I spend a decent amount of time because there's obviously not like shampoo at the yeah. medical examiner's office. So I clean her hair, I do my best. I give it to the detective, and then my mentor was like, I think this needs to be your case. And I'm like, I think I'd like it to be my case.
Mm-hmm.
So what we end up doing is, because as our audience may or may not know, I don't know if we've addressed this previously, but decomposition occurs from the head down already. Mm-hmm. But since she had additional areas of trauma, her post-cranial body was relatively intact. However, her cranial area or her head was not. Soft tissue and skeletal material alike. So that is why a forensic anthropologist was commissioned. We go through the process of collecting her cranial material, and she is in, for lack of a better phrase, smithereens.
Okay.
I spent over 120 hours putting her head back together piece by piece. Like I glued it piece by piece by piece. And since I'm assuming that a lot of our audience doesn't know this, I know that you have an image of what a skull looks like in your head, but what yeah. you're not seeing are all the teeny tiny bones that are inside of your skull.
Correct.
And that was a mess. And her eye orbits were a mess, and her nasal bones were a mess, and her upper jawbone or her maxilla was a mess. And I did not care. And it's very, very difficult when something is so thin to like glue it because it can essentially fragment in your fingers.
Yeah. So there's mm-hmm. usually, you know, 22 to 28 bones, depending on what you're counting
right.
in the skull.
Yeah.
So how many do you think that you had that you were putting?
Oh, like Shelly, together? I mean,
double that, triple that.
I can't. I mean, I would say in the hundreds, to be honest.
Wow.
There was parts because when she fell and he started to strike the side of her head, I want you to think about like a pitcher falling mm-hmm. to the side and the difference between hitting like the back of it while it's standing up and then having it flat on a surface laying like hot dog.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
hitting it like it because then it the force.
Yeah. It's
then
easier to shatter into multiple pieces as opposed
it becomes
to, yeah.
a lot more concentric.
Mm-hmm.
That had done something like it had split her mandible, even though the force was to her cranial vault.
Mm-hmm.
It had like, you know, broken like her temporal mandibular joint, which is the part of your jaw that hooks into your head.
Like the lot when people have popping jaw, that's it.
Exactly.
That part. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. And like her mastoid process, which is in episode one where I had everybody feel behind their ears.
Yeah.
It had done a lot of damage to that. However, because the bones of the cranial vault, meaning the occipital, the parietals, and then well, the temporals are really thin, but like those and the frontal bone, because those are so sturdy compared mm-hmm. to the rest of the bones, I did have the strike marks. And a CSI will tell you that we can use things like concentric or circular or radial, which are the linear fractures that are inside of circular fractures, to determine the order of strikes. So this is best described visually.
Yeah.
But essentially what happens is, imagine that you shoot a window and there's a fracture pattern.
Yeah.
And then you shoot it again. The second strike's breaking fracture pattern is going to be interrupted by the first.
Mm-hmm.
So that same theory applies to your bone.
Yeah.
So if I've got a strike mark and then subsequent strike marks, I can tell which order they happen based on the interruption of the concentric and radial fractures to the skull.
Exactly. Yeah, you find
a strike point. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. It makes sense to me because that's what, like, we actually have done that before when we were in school. We were doing that. And, you know, I've seen it. And so, yeah, it absolutely makes sense when you think about the actual strike point.
Right.
And so you find the strike points. And then, you know, if you think about it, just like you were saying, if you hit a windshield or a window, there's multiple strike points. And when you find those, then you can see which one interrupted which one. So then you can see the layers of it.
Exactly. So my mentor saw my devotion and my unique technique of reconstructing her head. She said to me, Laura, I know you were passionate about this young woman. However, when I was watching you put her back together, you were doing it in a way that, and with patience, that's not typical. And so she said, you need to publish on how you've done this. So for the next few years, every time there was a cranial reconstruction case, she had me do it. And then I did a publication for the American Academy of Forensic Sciences. I had a whole poster presentation on this. So it was a really big passion project of mine for the skull. And that victim in particular was the onset of my fascination with the skull.
That is really awesome. Yeah. That's I mean, it's a sad story, but it's a great story for you. And it's, I believe that, you know, that's something that I'm assuming that the family actually appreciated.
Well, I don't even know, because I'm fine with them not knowing what I did, because I don't know if they would, in the way that it's very, all right, so when there's been a homicide, what a lot of people don't understand is that until that case has been fully adjudicated, because homicides have no
statute of limitations.
Thank you. Yes.
Statute of limitations, yeah.
That's what you're here for. So he did actually get arrested, so it's not like we had to wait a long time, but while that is still a homicide case that is going through the legal system, any evidence of that case is held. So this becomes very complicated and difficult for families when, like, we had to keep her head until the case was over. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
To
okay,
them, this
that.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can be something as simple as keeping a section, like a tiny section of the skull that maybe has like a strike mark from sharp force trauma. That can mean so many different things. But for victims' families, they want to lay this person to rest. And this is very uncomfortable for them. And
yes, definitely.
I absolutely understand that and empathize with it. It's unfortunately the nature of the beast when you want your loved one to have justice. So
yeah,
that is something that's very difficult for people to struggle with internally, is, well, they need this and it's kind of the law anyways, but I really would like to not bury my partial loved one, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So
definitely.
Those are little things that kind of creep in that make it hard for us when we, like, know how it is, but then at the same time, you are not a dead inside human being, and you're like, I get that you hate this. I get that you hate this. I agree with why you hate this, but this is necessary, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, like, tell me a Shelly skull thing to break up all this morbidity. Like, what's a Shelly skull thing?
Wow. So, you know, I actually wanted to hit back on, you were talking about, you know, when the baby had fallen. So one of the things that there was an accident that we went on, a motor vehicle accident, and there was a child that was in a car seat, and the child in the car seat was in the back seat, properly restrained and everything. And a person in the front seat, one of the driver and passenger in the front seat, and one of the people in the front seat ended up dying. The other person ended up living. But they did have some major injuries. And then there was another child in the back seat. So there were four passengers, and one was a smaller child that was in a car seat. And the child that was in the car seat actually did not sustain major injuries at all. Yeah. They were very minor. And it's because they are so pliable and because they aren't seeing an accident coming. So they don't tense up, because when you tense up and then you get hit with the vehicle, then, you know, or you get in an automobile accident, then your injuries can potentially become much worse because the way that the body mechanics of the body. So that was interesting because I just wanted to kind of talk about that, how, you know, babies are definitely, you know, they don't understand or know that there's danger ahead of them. So they don't tense up for any reason. And the other
child
in the
back seat. That's what they say about drunk people.
That is what they say about drunk people. However, you know, I mean, hopefully no one's driving drunk. It's, you know, they're just passengers drunk.
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah. And then I also wanted to, I didn't want to interrupt your story because your story was so interesting and I didn't want you to lose track.
No, thank you.
But there was another case that I had where there was an autopsy, and it was at the autopsy, the family wanted a piece of the person, they wanted their ponytail. Apparently the decedent had always wore a ponytail. And so they requested, when they filled out the paperwork, they requested at the autopsy that we cut the ponytail off and save it for them. So, you know, there's little things like that you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, for skulls, there's, you know, a couple stories, but the one that kind of just popped into my head was botched surgery for cranial reconstruction.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, be careful where you get your surgeries done. I mean, if you're, you know, we are in California, we have a lot of places where people like to go off-roading, and they'll go off-roading out East County, and it's almost like the border of Mexico. And this is kind of a scary place, because in these areas, if you get an accident or if something bad happens, for instance, you know, you're on a quad, or you're on a, you know, a sand dune or a buggy, or, you know, a side-by-side, whatever you want to call it, then those accidents, when they occur, there's not a hospital nearby. So either you have to be air.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. You either have to, like, they have to air flight you out, or you go to Mexico. And if you go to Mexico.
Oh, God. Okay.
So if you go to Mexico, be careful, because sometimes some of their doctors, and especially in these areas, sometimes their doctors are not the best at how they put your skull back together. And
oh my God, Shelly. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, you know, I wish we could show photos, but yes, there's a crazy photo where it looks like a bicycle chain is pretty much on this person's face trying to keep it together. You know, we all know that, you know, we have pins and rods and stuff like that when we break bones, but, you know, when you break your face, that skull that we love so much.
Yeah. It feels a little bit different than a arm.
Yeah. It absolutely does. And they also have to use different suture mechanisms, as well as, you know, different titanium and, you know, different, I'm trying to think of the, what's the word I'm thinking of? The, like,
implants.
Yes. Because, you know, if they do something wrong, you have a brain behind there that can't be punctured.
So exactly.
They have to be careful. So, you know, they have to use different tools and, you know, different things. But yeah.
Speaking of that, do you know what a trepanation is?
Ooh, tell us what that is.
Okay, so essentially, if you have significant trauma to your head, your brain can swell because it's tissue and there's blood flow to it. And when that happens, your skull at a certain age doesn't have a lot of give. So there's no room for the brain to swell, and it can cause a lot of problems. So what they do is they cut a little hole in your skull.
Yes, they do.
And they make room for that swelling. And it looks little bit scary, but it's literally necessary for you to live.
I know that, you know, you can have trepanation. And actually, I know someone who's had it done on their fingernail when you get a blood blister, like if you smash your nail in the
door. Yeah, it's like a hole.
Yeah, they just drill a hole and it just releases the pressure. And it, you know, a lot of times it ends up releasing blood. Yeah, yeah. But the trepanation.
Yeah, because it can like generate heat. And your brain can boil in there.
Well, yeah. So the trepanation in a fingernail, though, it's crazy to think about this because it's so much smaller than the trepanation in the skull. The skull is like a golf ball size. Yeah, as opposed to like
a, I would say a golf ball or a quarter.
Okay,
yeah, so like most of the ones I've seen are like a quarter size or a half dollar.
Maybe half dollar. I don't know. How big is a golf ball? Okay, I'm not gonna act like I can hit a ball. Okay, so yeah, maybe a half dollar.
Well, to your point, though, Shelly, like all of these like medical implants that you're talking about cranially and things like trepanations, these are all individual characteristics that we can use postmortem. So
absolutely.
I have seen like a healed trepanation before in a postmortem exam of skeletal remains. I have seen metal implants. Both with teeth, replacing like the maxilla or elements of the mandible and or parts of the skull. By the way, I'm assuming, I'm about to age myself. For those of you like me who had the majority of your childhood in the late 80s or 90s, if you remember the show Pete and Pete, when the mom had a metal plate in her head.
What are you even talking about?
I loved Pete and Pete. It was on Nickelodeon.
In the late 80s or 90s?
Oh my God. I was young in the late 80s and or like the 90s. Don't get mad. Yeah.
Okay.
The 90s, all right, well, which was, by the way, the best decade ever. I love the 90s.
To be true. I don't believe that to be true. Well, the 90s was pretty rad because the music was pretty awesome.
I know. But I mean, I'm not hating on the 80s.
The 80s were amazing. You know, 70s were pretty good too. Just saying.
I know.
Sorry, I'm aging myself now.
You are definitely not aging yourself. You are clearly a person who utilizes moisturizer, so you look great.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I remember you telling me that I was 21.
I said, yeah, you're having your, like, I don't know, like 15th annual 21st birthday or something like
15th
that.
15th annual 21st birthday? Wait. That's pretty damn old. I'm not that old.
Well, 15th annual 21st birthday would make you, I can't even do the math on that. So I wasn't trying to insult you.
21 plus 15.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, I was going to say it's not that bad. I didn't like make you seem like
I'm older
than geriatric. So you're older than what I said. And I was, I was being complimentary.
I think you're about that age. Yeah.
Yes, I am. I'm actually older than that too. So I was not insulting you, my sweet friend.
Anyway, so there's this thing inside of our brains. I'm sorry, inside of our skulls, and it's called our brain. And for me, sometimes when there's shiny things, it just has its way with, you know,
pretty.
Very pretty. So apologies.
Yeah. For me, apologies. It's like, ooh, a piece of cheese. Ooh, a piece of cheese. Ooh, a piece of cheese. I know.
Yeah. So
okay. But
tell me more.
Yes, I have so much more. Okay. So one case that really stands out, and conveniently, I was also a student. Not that all of my cases, by the way, that stand out are from when I was a student, but this was really, really cool because we even got to be involved with America's Most Wanted on this case.
Ooh, I love that.
I know. So while I was studying under my mentor, there was 8 skeletons found in a wooded area in Florida by my university. Okay. And we worked with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement on the search and recovery of those remains because they had been there for quite some time. So there were things like animal scavenging that had come into play. So yeah, the remains were kind of scattered throughout. And the cool thing about this case was, well, A, literally everything. It was associated with a serial killer. I'm not going to call it out because I don't believe in giving serial killers additional credence. And again, I don't know how the victim's families feel about this. So there were 8 skeletons found in Florida, and we spent a lot of time recovering all the skeletal material we could. And then my cohort, meaning the other students that were part of the master's program with me and I and my mentor, spent a really long time matching up bones with who they belonged to. And what we ended up determining is that all of these skeletons were from males that were showing traits skeletally as Hispanic. Now, I say it that way because you can look externally more dominant towards one ancestral group, like European, African, Asian, South American. Correct. But your skeletal material might default to the ancestral roots that you have of someone else. So that's why in anthropology, we always say we're doing our best, right? Because right, like we do our best. So these were all Hispanic skeletal males within their general 30s.
Oh, okay.
And it was fascinating to uncover that because I was already tasked with doing that skeletal reconstruction project. And additionally, my mentor and I had decided on a the cranial reconstruction project on a skull or cranial foundation for my master's thesis. So I was the head girl, basically. I was all about the skulls. I know. Rightfully so. So she had assigned me to go through and validate the cranial suture aging that we discussed in episode 1. Now, I want to rearticulate from that episode that this is the least reliable way to do a skeletal analysis of age. However, sometimes it's all you got. So we have to do our best, right? Luckily, for the majority of these remains, the cranial age was within a nice deviation from what the postcranial material told us. So it wasn't that far off.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. Now, I also want to say that there was a lot of taphonic change. Now, we've referenced this in an earlier episode, but I guess I shouldn't assume that everybody has listened to all of our episodes, even though they listen out of order. Maybe they listen out of order. Okay. So a taphonic change is a change due to the environment. So these remains were found in a wooded area. And there was a lot of dry change. There was a lot of like discoloration due to the ground, due to plant life. There was, I know I mentioned animal scavenging earlier, but the element of
animal activity, definitely.
Right. So that just doesn't occur in like an animal grabbing like a hand and running away with it. That also means that like there's little like teeth marks and that affects the integrity of the skeletal remains. So that means that there were things that were broken, things that were frayed, things that were, like, so while I'm doing this suture aging, there were things that had been like gnawed on. And so it was really a cool project for me to learn how to work around challenges since I had spent so much time around the skull. And to compound upon that, since I've referenced this several times, what my mentor and I determined I should study for my master's thesis is cranial markers of nutritional change. And the reason why I made it significant is to show areas of stress that could potentially be due to malnutrition or abuse. Now, the way that I did that, yeah. So you, as I mentioned in episode one, Wolf's Law, bone changes with life. And that's not just pressure that you place on bone. It's also nutritional, right? Like, oh, drink milk. It'll be good for your bones. Yada, yada, yada.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So if you are not having all of the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that you need to be healthy, your bone will react. And what I studied was something called, and don't worry, like I'm about to say words, okay? Like, don't worry, I'll explain it. I studied something called parotid hyperostosis.
Okay.
And something called cribra orbitalia, and I measured it along with something called linear enamel hyperplasia.
Oh. Okay. Okay. All right. I gotcha.
So let me break down those words.
Yeah.
Parotid hyperostosis. So the word parotid, I think we can all figure out that porous.
Yes.
Hyperostosis. So let me make this simple. Your head, like when you put your hands on top of your head.
Yes.
Those where your fingers come together and then where your hands wrap around down by your ears, those are your parietal bones.
Yes.
Those bones, if you are deficient in iron or some proteins and amino acids, there will literally start to look like somebody has come along and poked holes in your head. And that can float down into the occipital, which is that big, thick bone on the very, very back of your head that we had you hold.
Yes, that's the supposedly the strongest bone in the skull.
That's right. And a very awesome forensic anthropologist named Patty Stewart McAdam, I studied her research extensively, and she was actually able to metric the severity of that porosity. So there was like a millimeter scale.
Wow.
There was images that you could quantify this.
Yeah.
Now, additionally, cribra orbitalia is literally the same exact porosities, only orbitalia, eye orbits.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to put your fingers on your eyebrows and then imagine the fact that your bone of your skull then goes back to facilitate the crib of your eye.
Yes.
On the very, very roof. So like for some of us, you can, depending on how you're skeletally structured in your head, you can actually feel that ridge where your bone then starts to go in.
Yeah, it's like roof. When people say, oh my gosh, I have a headache, and they put their thumbs like right underneath their eyebrows.
Right under the eyebrows.
They push on in their orbital socket and they're like, oh, I have a headache.
Exactly.
That's what you're talking about.
Exactly. So that roof of your eye orbit will get those same partition or like little holes.
It almost
as
looks like a sponge.
It does when it's very, very severe. Now, sometimes only the eyes happen. And sometimes only the parietals or the occipital or the top of your head will happen.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't really able to determine in my research the difference between which one onsets when. I just know that it happens typically with iron deficiency anemia. Now, the other big word that I used, linear enamel hyperplasia. Okay, so linear lines, enamel, the enamel of your teeth. Hyperplasia. Okay, let's get into what I mean by that. As we are growing, your adult teeth are being formed. So that enamel is being laid down. And as we mentioned in part one, teeth are acellular. So as this is being laid down, it's not like a living thing that grows. Yeah. If you are lacking the proper nutrition as your teeth are being formed, like on a horizontal way, there will be a disruption in the laying down of that enamel and it will create little ridges. Now, the cool thing about that is we can relatively metric tooth formation to age. So the purpose of my research was, does parotid hyperostosis or cribra orbitalia exist? And if it does, is it comorbid or along with linear enamel hyperplasia? Because if it is, I am able to say this lack of nutrition occurred in childhood possibly within this age range. And I even viewed teeth that had several layers of linear enamel hypoplasia, which means that in youth, that person never had great nutrition at multiple points of their life.
Yeah.
Now, what I was hoping to do was be able to use this as a modern day indicator of childhood abuse because the child was not being properly cared for or provided for. So sorry, guys, this isn't our typical episode. I just got very sciencey.
So on that note, thank you, everyone, for listening to the Crime Scene Queens. And as Laura so graciously said, if you want to reach out to us, please email us at hello@crimescenequeens.com. Don't forget to follow us and message us on social media. And make sure that you tell your friends and listen to all of our other episodes, especially the one prior to this one, so you kind of understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, so it's in context.
Yeah. To put everything in context. And then you can say, oh, I gotcha now. Or, no, you big dummy. This is what it is. No. Anyway, so you can listen to all those, all of our previous episodes on any platform such as Apple, Spotify, Google, even Amazon.
Amazon, all of that. Well, as we always say, if you're gonna die, do your local crime scene unit a favor and keep it interesting. Or at least give us a lot of evidence when you do it. But we love you so much. Bye-bye, everybody.
Crime Scene Queens is a Q-Code Media production. Executive produced by David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Ryan Countshouse. Edited by Nate Dufort. And theme song and music by Darren Johnson.